Hello and welcome to our Food Principles module, Ayurvedic Diets part. And I'm really excited to have this part in the program because it's one of those diets that a lot of people follow and people that you are going to see will come in and say, oh yeah, I went to an Ayurvedic practitioner. And while you may not be an Ayurvedic practitioner, I want you to know enough to be able to understand what they're doing and you help them with the Ayurvedic diet, which sometimes isn't really in alignment with a completely healthy diet. Sometimes they have things in there that may not work for that person. But we're going to help you to use Ayurvedic principles to customize. It's all about customized nutrition for folks. So today we have a very special guest presenter, which is our own Jan Chamberlain. And I'm really excited that Jan did a lot of research in putting this together. And she's going to teach us all about Ayurvedic diet. So welcome, Jan.
Well, thank you. The information in this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional and is not intended as medical advice. It is intended as a sharing of knowledge and information from the research and experience of Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, DrRitaMarie.com, and the experts who have contributed. We encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This presentation is provided for informational purposes only, and no guarantees, promises, representations, or warranties of any kind regarding specific or general benefits have been or will be made by Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, her affiliates, or their officers, principals, representative agents, or employees. Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo is not responsible for and shall have no liability for any success or failure, acts and or omissions, the appropriateness of the participant's decisions, or the use of or reliance on this information. And that being said, I have just a small disclosure or disclaimer myself. This is not an overall comprehensive class in Ayurveda because that would take hours and hours. But as Dr. Rita Marie mentioned, what we have provided you with is a good outline so that you'll be familiar with the principles and you'll know how to provide care for someone who is already working with an Ayurvedic practitioner or someone that may resonate with these principles. And appropriately, we're starting with an ancient Ayurveda proverb: if diet is wrong, medicine is of no use. If diet is correct, medicine is of no need. And this is, of course, what we believe in the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. So how to pronounce? Let's start off. It's Ayurveda. Okay. And so the British pronunciation is Ayurveda. So either one is acceptable, but Ayurveda is how we pronounce it. These come from, many of the words in Ayurveda come from the ancient Sanskrit language, which is the sort of the holy language or the official language of Ayurveda. And Ayurveda means the science of life or life wisdom. We have the word Veda, which means science, and the word Ayur, which means life. And it has its origins in India over 2000 BC. We see some writings from the Hindu lord Dhanvantri. And he's known as the father of Ayurveda. But we also find that the oral tradition can go even as far back as 4000 BC. So it's part of the other Vedic traditions or sciences. Yoga, meditation, and astrology are some of the others. And the concept and theory is to have the right diet for each specific mind-body type and right spiritual living for each specific mind-body type. So you have the right diet for the body and the right spiritual diet for the mind, and vice versa. They're interconnected, as you'll see. And Ayurveda basically is built upon five elements, the building blocks of all material existence: space, air, fire, water, and earth, and keeping those elements in balance. So the two main principles of Ayurveda are that the mind and body are inseparably connected, and the mind has the ultimate power to heal the body. And Ayurveda takes a personalized approach, which is what we like to do also in customizing protocols for our own clients. Ayurveda takes a semi-personalized approach because the idea is always to find balance within the mind-body type or dosha, and this balance will influence the optimal choices for your client. And these are choices such as diet, exercise, supplements, and lifestyle. So there are three basic mind-body types, or doshas, D-O-S-H-A. You'll be familiar with that word as we go through the slides. And the mind-body types are based upon body shape and size, predominant mood, do they tend to be anxious, do they tend to be more laid back, bone structure, small, medium, large, appetite, food cravings, heat, cold tolerance, energy level, and metabolism. So the three types are the Vata, Pitta, Kapha, and we will learn about each one of those. The science of the three mind-body types is showing that space and air are reflected in the Vata type, and this can manifest predominantly in one person, or perhaps during the winter time, we have a lot of Vata excess, and so people want to consume Vata pacifying foods, for example. Vata is the lightest of the three mind-body types, and in light in that it is relating to space and air, and then we have the Pitta, which is fire and water, reflecting those particular elements, and then the Kapha, water and earth, and that's the heaviest element. Those are some of the heaviest elements. If you were to carry those, they would be physically heavier. And so Kapha has a heavier energy, whereas Vata has a lighter energy. And Vata, again, reflecting the elements of space and air, here are some ideas of what physical characteristics of someone who is predominantly a Vata dosha type, or whose Vata may be out of balance in the case of some of the symptoms that are less than desirable. So the Vata tends to be slender, rarely gains weight, taller or shorter than average, has thin body features, again, hair, neck, fingers, and lips. The energy fluctuates, comes and goes in spurts. They may have a lot of energy in the morning and then just tank during the afternoon, or these may be your night owls. They're up at night, but not energy during the day. The appetite is variable, high one day, low the next. Tendency to become bloated, gassy, or constipated. They have a lot of digestive issues. Skin is frequently dry, tends to have cold hands and feet, a light sleeper, and often has difficulty falling asleep, and they prefer warm, moist weather to cold or dry weather. The psychological characteristics are creative and imaginative, artistic. This is a person with an active mind, very easily bored, learns quickly, but can also forget quickly. Again, with those elements of space and air, when Vata is out of balance, can become spacey easily, tendency to feel anxious, nervous, insecure, speaks quickly, uses hand gestures. Movements are quick and light. They're active, always on the go. Lifestyle and daily routine are irregular. They thrive on variety, and their dreams can be colorful and active. And now we move to the Pitta, a little bit heavier, a little bit warmer elements of fire and water. Physical characteristics here are medium build, can gain, lose weight easily. Their height is average. They can develop muscles easily. They're very athletic. I have a daughter who's a Pitta, and she, when she's pregnant, she will gain up to 70 pounds, but she can lose that in 6 months. And she participates in bodybuilding competitions, etc. She's very slender, but she can eat massive amounts of food, as you see down here. And the facial features are sharp and pointed. Bowel movements are regular. Pitta has pretty good digestion generally, if not out of balance. Occasionally, they will have diarrhea. Perspires quite easily, as opposed to the Vata, who has a lot of difficulty perspiring. Skin is oily, again, as opposed to the Vata with the drier skin and has a reddish undertone. Eyes can be penetrating, prefers cooler weather, and can become irritable in hot weather. The Pitta psychological characteristics, these are your goal-oriented achievers with a great sense of humor, strong intellect, they enjoy learning, natural leaders, perfectionistic, can be, when Pitta is out of balance, irritable, impatient, or angry, critical of self or others, stubborn, irritable if they don't eat regularly, and enjoy competition. And now we move on to the Kapha. Again, these are the elements of water and earth, so a little bit heavier. They have strong frames, stocky body build, larger bone structure, excellent stamina. they're really built to last. And these may be the slow starters, but the strong finishers. They gain weight easily, can retain fluid easily. We see edema a lot in the kapha types, and especially when kapha is out of balance. They are sound sleepers, have regular digestion, unless, again, out of balance, sensitive to cold and damp, thick hair, radiant skin, which can be on the oily side, and large, soft eyes. And so along with that, the psychological characteristics, generous, giving, positive focus. Their nature is calm, slow to anger. They prefer a slow, relaxed lifestyle. Sentimental, often thinks about the past. My husband is a kapha, and he has every toy that he ever had from childhood. He loves to look at photo albums. He's predominantly kapha, and it's so interesting. Methodical, deliberate, highly protective of self and family, usually lets others take the lead. Natural listener, empathetic, doesn't learn quickly, but excellent long-term memory. And can allow, when out of balance, can allow negative emotions to build up rather than addressing them. So in Ayurveda, there are seven main constitutional types, and this has to do with what is called the prakriti, or the individual constitution. So there's three in which they have a predominant dosha, either the vata, pitta, or kapha, three which may reflect a strong blend of two doshas. And then there's one in which all three doshas exert nearly equal influence on the constitution. And again, during different seasons, different times, and different states of health, we can have a dosha be out of balance or one dosha predominate. So again, the idea is to achieve balance. Vikruti is the state of imbalance, and this is when something doesn't feel good, when your client is presenting with issues that are painful or are getting in the way of their everyday life. So imbalance is brought about in a general sense by, as we said, an increase, an unbalance of one of the doshas. And on the principle of like increases like, whatever they're eating, you know, drinking, looking at, thinking, smelling, touching is taken into the self, and the doshas of each of these things can increase the same dosha in the client. So we're looking at balancing, and one of the best ways to do that is with diet. So for the vata, again, this is the person who tends to feel cold and dry, has the cold hands, these warming cooked foods can be helpful. Or when vata is out of balance, in fact, during the winter time when there's a lot of vata in many areas, they favor sweet, sour, salty tastes, bitter, pungent, and astringent foods should be avoided. All dairy products basically can pacify vata according to Ayurvedic tradition. Sweet, sour, heavy fruits are preferred. Vegetables should be eaten cooked and raw salads reduced. Again, this is because vata tends to struggle with that digestive fire. And beets, carrots, asparagus, and sweet potatoes, as you can see, these are root vegetables. And so what we're looking at is the attempt to do some grounding here. Remember, space and air were the elements with the vata, and so they need grounding, and these are the people who benefit from earthing, the negative ions, and they can go out and really put their feet in the grass in the morning time. It's very helpful for the vata to pacify vata. Vata pacifying spices are, again, the warming spices, cardamom, cumin, ginger, cinnamon, salt, cloves, mustard seed, and some black pepper in moderation. And we'll talk a little bit more about pepper. There's a special pepper that we like, and it's called pipili. And so that's great for vata. This picture here is khichdi, and khichdi is a great, again, a nice, heavy, warming food for the vata. The pitta balancing diet, on the other hand, prefers the cooling raw foods, again, because pitta has that element of fire, and so we're looking to balance it with cooling. So we're favoring sweet, bitter, and astringent tastes, sweet foods such as rice and bread. Salty, sour, and hot, spicy foods are avoided. Milk, butter, and ghee are considered to be cooling dairy products, but we're minimizing yogurt, sour cream, citrus fruits, and spicy foods like cayenne. Cucumber, broccoli, zucchini, and asparagus are pitta pacifying and, again, great foods for summertime when pitta is a little bit during a hot summer when the pitta properties can be out of balance. And avoiding vegetables with heating properties like tomatoes, hot peppers, radishes, onions, garlic, and spinach. So fully ripe, sweet, juicy fruits such as melons, cherries, grapes, pears, and mangoes are helpful, and cooling spices, fennel, mint, and coriander are very good in the vata or the pitta smoothie. Excuse me. Now, a vata, for instance, I have a lot of vata characteristics, and vata can become out of balance in me very easily. And I would never put mint leaves in my smoothie because it's just, it's too cooling, but it's perfect for one with a pitta constitution. We're going to reduce hot spices, dried ginger and mustard seed, and favor liquid versus dry foods and cool or lukewarm versus hot foods. For the kapha, light and dry and warming foods. Remember, the kapha dosha tends to be quite heavy. So again, we're balancing with pungent, bitter, astringent tastes, lighter taste, reducing heavy, oily, or cold foods, avoiding salty, sour, and sweet foods, fresh fruits, vegetables, and legumes are all great. We're reducing nuts, again, because of the heavy and the fat, oily properties of the nuts. Favoring lighter fruits, apples, pears, reducing heavy or sour fruits. And honey, interestingly enough, is thought in Ayurvedic medicine to reduce kapha, whereas sugar increases kapha. Now, all vegetables are okay here except for tomatoes, cucumbers, sweet potatoes. Some of these root vegetables, again, are very grounding. The kapha doesn't need as much grounding as lightening up. So all spices are okay except for salt, which does increase the kapha. And remember, we said that kapha is prone to a water retention or edema. And also avoid leftovers. And that's pretty much an Ayurvedic rule that we want to avoid the leftovers, partially for energetic reasons, also because some of the nutritional value is not as good on the second day and the enzymatic action. But the kapha especially, they say to avoid leftovers. So here are some of the psychophysiological functions of the tridoshas or the three doshas to compare. Remember, we said again, vata, space and air. So vata has to do with respiration, swallowing, elimination, movement. Remember, the vata is a high movement, voluntary and involuntary, and absorption. So somewhat of the absorption, the pitta actually has, again, the fire, which is helpful for digestion, absorption, and assimilation. So the pitta is the one that is really able to absorb and assimilate the nutrients from the food the most efficiently. Kapha, again, that's the grounding, the water, the earth, has to do with the creation, repair, and maintenance of the body tissues and the nutrition of the tissues as well. Strength, stamina, calmness, and immunity all are some of the functions of having your kapha being in balance. Now, the doshas have also some related parts of the body. The kapha relates to the sinuses, nostrils, throat, bronchi, and lungs. And the pitta relates to the liver, spleen, gallbladder, stomach, duodenum, and pancreas. Again, that's your digestive area. And then the vata, remember we talked about movement, and the movement through the intestines, this is the small and the large intestine, have to do with vata. A very important concept in Ayurvedic medicine is this concept of Agni, the digestive fire. And it's composed of various acids and enzymes, they believe, and it's seated within the lower stomach and small intestine and relates to the pitta dosha. It's strongest at noon. And it basically refers to the individual's overall digestive capabilities. For instance, we might say her Agni is balanced. So while it's common to use the terms Agni and digestive fire interchangeably, there are in fact a total of 13 different Agnis, and they govern all metabolic functions of the body. So basically, Agni can refer to any process involving heat, light, transformation, and conversion. And on a universal scale, Agni is basically considered the creative flame of intelligence that's present in all life. So So it's basically a catalyst, if you will. For our purposes in this presentation, we're basically talking about digestive Agni. And after an individual's, I think this is very interesting, after the individual's current doshic state, so that's the first thing to determine where the individual is, Agni then is the second most important factor in determining their dietary needs. And things that weaken Agni are not eating according to their dosha, so they're not eating in balance, repeatedly eating the same foods over and over, overeating, eating bland, tasteless foods. They really feel that all six tastes should be included in every meal. Eating leftovers, as we mentioned. Drinking water with meals, because of course that's going to dilute the digestive fire. And we know about that with the hydrochloric acid. Lack of sleep, irregular meal times, and skipping meals, and lack of exercise all can contribute to weakening the digestive fire, or the Agni. Some practices to build Agni are always eating sitting down. This may be familiar to a lot of you. Heart math, a calm atmosphere when eating. Eating only when truly hungry, not snacking, not grazing. Eating at a moderate pace, chewing thoroughly. And if you're having a liquid, then you sort of want to chew that as much as you can. And if you have a solid, you want to chew that until it becomes a liquid. Minimizing raw foods. Raw foods much harder to digest than cooked ones if the Agni is weak, including all six tastes at each meal, making lunch the heaviest meal of the day, followed by breakfast with dinner the lightest meal, again because Agni is considered to be the strongest at noon. Drinking hot water throughout the day and adding some ginger in is helpful as well. Exercising regularly and a daily oil massage that balances your dosha. And vata tends to do well with sesame oil for the vata type. Sunflower oil is appropriate for the pitta dosha. And the kapha needs a very light oil because the kapha is already heavy. It's already fairly oily. So a light oil, corn oil, I would suggest coconut oil. All three doshas benefit actually from coconut oil and from shea butter or oil. So a daily oil massage, meditating daily, the fire breathing, Kapalbhati breathing. We do that in yoga, in some different yoga practices. In the Bikram yoga that I taught, we always ended with Kapalbhati breathing, and that's fire breathing or skull clearing. And tongue scraping, first thing in the morning and after meals. And we'll talk about more about that later. So some great herbs to enhance Agni. And I want to go back one bit on the oils. I just want to tell some essential oils. I think this is helpful too. For vata, you want to have some balancing blends. So you may take, say, your carrier oil is sesame oil or coconut oil, and you might want to include some sweet warming oils that soothe the mind and emotions for the vata and enhance serenity. Something like geranium or ylang ylang or frankincense, sweet orange. For the pitta, you want a sweet cooling oil like rose or fennel or sandalwood for your essential oil that you would mix together. And for the kapha, you want a balancing blend that's warm and spicy and invigorating. Again, because the kapha tends to be a little bit sluggish, a little bit slower. So on those damp, cold, gray spring days to wake you up, you could use an oil such as rosemary, eucalyptus, or basil. So then back to the herbs to enhance Agni. And I want to go over a couple of these herbs because you may not be familiar with them. The ashwagandha, I think we're pretty much all familiar with. That's a wonderful universal adaptogenic herb that we use quite a lot. But triphala, I've listened to some Indian doctors in doing the research. That's how they pronounce it. I've also heard it pronounced triphala. But triphala is what they say. It's a combination of three fruits. The amlitaki, which supports a healthy intestinal system. Bibitaki, which supports the natural balance of intestinal mucus. And haritaki, which supports the function and strength of the intestinal wall. So triphala is a great herb for those with a sluggish migrating motor complex, The MMC, because it helps to tone and stimulate that motor complex in the intestinal tract. And it's a great classic herbal formula for occasional constipation. Gugulu is one of Ayurveda's, and you'll also hear it mentioned as gugul. It's one of Ayurveda's most important purifying herbs, and it cleanses unhealthy tissues. It is said to increase the white blood cell count, and it rejuvenates the skin. So it's traditionally been considered that one of the best blood detoxifiers. In the original text, it's mentioned over 2,000 years ago to be useful in any condition that's characterized by congestion or stagnation. So it's recommended to clear the sinuses, to relieve chronic skin disorders. They say it's helpful for inflammation, obesity, to cool inflamed joints, and shrink swollen glands. Now, Brahmi is named after one of the highest states of consciousness, the Brahman or God consciousness. And Brahmi is also known as Bacopa. You may have heard of this, Bacopa Monieri. It's one of the most powerful herbs. The leaf of this plant resembles the cerebellum. And so it's traditionally used to promote memory and intelligence and to help relax the central nervous system. It supports restful sleep and calms emotional turbulence and can simultaneously improve concentration and alertness. And turmeric and ginger we're all familiar with. They're wonderful anti-inflammatories and have lots of great properties, especially with digestion as well. And neem is actually an evergreen tree. From the evergreen tree, they used to chew on the twigs actually for their teeth because neem can prevent and heal gum disease, prevent cavities, eliminate bacteria, and inflammation of the gums, prevent the bacteria from adhering to the teeth and thereby reduce plaque. It can enhance mouth immunity in general and also freshen the breath. So neem is a great herb as well. And then this pipli is actually the long pepper. So it's a close relative of the table spice black pepper, but it is different. It's indigenous to India and Sri Lanka. And unlike cayenne pepper, pipli is not in the nightshade family. So it can be used by those who may be unable to tolerate nightshades. It's both pungent and sweet, and it's neither hot nor cold. So it's a very good pepper also for pitta dosha imbalance. And it also has great carminative actions. It's a great carminative herb, and it can tone the liver. And it's also a good metabolic stimulant to help upregulate thyroid function. So if you have someone with hypothyroid, this may be a helpful herb to use. Ama is known as the toxic product, byproduct of poor digestion. It's basically the undigested food residue that lodges itself within the organs and channels of the body. And with the consistency of a sort of a sticky paste, ama is whitish yellow in color and it can have a putrid smell. So the majority, they believe, of health disorders are in some way linked to the presence of this substance. And simply stated, ama is basically the undigested food that begins to eat you. So they want to focus on ridding the body of excess ama. Again, the tongue scraping upon rising, they believe that ama can build up overnight. Sweating in the sauna, regular exercise, balanced diet with plenty of fiber for the colon so that, again, the ama can be eliminated in that way. Fasting, drinking cleansing teas, dry brushing of the skin, and also to stimulate the lymph and help the lymph to carry out the ama, and then using the herbs that we mentioned before to enhance Agni. And the opposite of ama is what is known as ojas, and the end product of perfect digestion and assimilation of the food properly is ojas. So high ojas is equal to good health, low ojas is poor health. Ojas can be increased by things like laughing and smiling. Again, these are the psychological components. Then we know that there is a mind-body connection, taking time to relax, meditation, spending time in nature, exercising creativity, offering your gifts to others and being willing to share, following your heart's passion, and engaging in physical activity, as well as, of course, by doing all the things in order to increase the digestive fire. So basically, there are seven principles, Ayurvedic principles of health: sleeping during the proper hours, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., exercising upon waking, avoiding snacking, including all six tastes at each meal, eating the largest meal at noon, sipping hot water or tea throughout the day, and part of that, again, is to break up the ojas, and practicing meditation. So let's take the first one. Again, insufficient sleep, as we know, is a contributing factor in weight gain, and not only is sufficient rest important, but sleeping in harmony with the sun's rhythms is just as vital. So according to Ayurvedic tradition, the time period most supportive of restful sleep is between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Does that sound familiar? To make the most of nature's rhythms, again, we want to turn off our screens, TV screens, computer screens, begin to wind down so that at 10 o'clock we could turn off the lights and ideally get in bed. Exercising upon wakening, they also believe that the ideal time to exercise is between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. And at this time, earth and water elements are high in the environment, and these elements tend to create slowness, coolness, dullness, and inertia. So we want to counteract that sluggishness, and we want to warm the body with exercise, bringing fresh blood to the brain and preparing both the body and mind for a new day. We want to aim for 45 to 60 minutes of vigorous exercise each morning. Snacking between meals. Obviously, we know about the insulin. When we eat, the body produces insulin, and the sugar that enters the cells is going to fuel the energy needs for about 3 hours. And only after that time can we begin to burn fat. And if we eat every 3 hours, the body is not given an opportunity to dip into the fat store. So, again, Ayurvedic principle is that three nourishing, balanced meals each day with no snacks in between will actually stabilize the energy levels more than frequent meals. And in addition, fat burning potential can drastically increase. This is very interesting. All six tastes at every meal, and each taste is associated with certain chemicals, compounds that the body needs. So in order to feel satisfied after each meal, again, because you're just going to be eating three meals if you're doing the Ayurvedic lifestyle, you want to include at least a small portion of each one of the six tastes in every meal. The madura, that's the sweet, with the earth plus water. Those are your carbs, sugars, fats, amino acids. This is cooling. Amla is sour. That's the earth plus fire, which is heating. These are the organic acids. Lavana, this is salty, water plus fire, it's also heating, and again, these are your salts and electrolytes. Tikta, this is hot and pungent, fire plus air, again, heating and the volatile oils. Katsu, bitter, air plus the ether, so this is cooling. These are the alkaloids, the glycosides that we find in foods. And the kshaya. And these are astringent, the air plus the earth, and they're cooling, and they're the tannins that are found in plants and also in some herbal teas. So here's some examples. Again, the sweet, and we'll just go with the Western names here. These are the sweet. So the effect of the sweet taste, as you can see, it's comforting, pleasurable. They say it increases the ojas, the energy, and enhances the mood, but in excess, of course, it creates imbalances such as obesity, diabetes, depression. And again, these are found in whole grains, dairy, meats, nuts, legumes, sweet fruits, honey and other sweeteners, carrots, beets, and sweet potatoes, so these sweet vegetables, and spices such as basil, licorice, and fennel. The sour foods tend to stimulate the appetite, promote salivation, increase digestion and assimilation, maintain acid balance, and cleanse the tissues. And they also believe they can sharpen the mind and strengthen the sense organs and heart. In excess, though, again, you're looking at perhaps some heartburn, acidity, ulcers, irritation, itchiness, blood toxicity, and edema. So citrus fruits, pickled or fermented foods are great, vinegar, yogurt, sour cream, cheeses, tamarind, tomato products, again, a little bit more acid, and spices such as caraway and coriander. Salty foods, again, the salty balances the vital minerals, can maintain moisture and electrolytes according to Ayurvedic tradition, promotes salivation and digestion, and also works as a laxative. But in excess, again, we can get aging skin, graying hair, inflammatory skin diseases, the rashes, pimples, peptic ulcers, gout, hypertension, water retention, and obesity. And so, again, good sources of these salty foods, sea salt, ocean vegetables, seaweed, kelp, and fish. For the pungent foods, this is helpful to stimulate that appetite, metabolism, digestive fire. They also believe that it can help with improving circulation, mental clarity, and reduce congestion, water retention. The pungent facilitates the sweating. And again, remember we talked about the ama, the toxins in the body. So it helps to purify the blood and to eliminate blood clots and also to kill germs. It tends to have an antiseptic property to it. So excessive pungent can cause heartburn, peptic ulcer, irritation, inflammation, skin diseases, impurities in, with pitta excess, dryness, weakness, weariness, and with vata excess, dizziness. So again, chili peppers, mustard seeds, ginger, cloves, onions, garlic, radish, and then also asafoetida, which is, we have an alternate spelling here, is a very important herb also used. Hing is another name for asafoetida, and it also works as a wonderful carminative herb for digestion as well. And it's a staple ingredient in the kachari, which is the mung bean, the lentil soup that is made and can be made to pacify pretty much any dosha. So there's a kachari for every dosha, or kichari, as it's often pronounced. And then black pepper and cayenne is also considered pungent. Bitter foods. Bitter foods tend to, again, cleanse the ama, the toxins from the body, can kill germs, strengthen the immune system, cooling, itching, or burning skin, cleansing the liver and the blood, promoting digestion, and relieving fever. And in excess, though, they can be dehydrating, reduce the bone marrow and the semen, increase roughness, dryness, and dizziness, especially in a condition where the vata is unbalanced. So we have bitter melon and gourd, Japanese eggplant, turmeric, fenugreek seeds, dark leafy greens, barley, basil, nettle, jicama, lettuce, aloe vera, coffee, cacao, and rhubarb are some examples of digestive bitters. You could probably do dandelion greens, anything that, again, gets that bitter taste going and helps to improve digestion. Astringent foods are actually drying to the body. They decrease the water and the mucus, and so you could see how they would be helpful to the kapha dosha. They're anti-inflammatory, reduce sweating. They can slow down diarrhea and bleeding, but in excess, of course, you get the opposite effect, dry mouth, constipation, gas, sometimes spasms, paralysis, and heart disorder. So astringent foods are foods such as green tea, grapes, cranberries, apple, pomegranate, and pomegranate is considered both sour and bitter because, again, it's sour on the tongue, but it's both astringent and bitter and sour as well. This is probably one of the reasons why pomegranate is such a considered a superfood. Pear, quinoa, legumes, beans, lentils, garbanzo beans, tofu, sprouts, okra, saffron, and again, the turmeric. It's both bitter and astringent, so it has a couple different qualities that are wonderful. Unripe banana and cruciferous veggies are also astringent. So Ayurvedic saying is, you're not what you eat, you are what you digest. So again, to maximize your digestion, you're going to eat your largest meal at noontime. And the noon hour, as we mentioned, is when the Agni is the strongest. So in accordance with that, dinner would be light then and easily digestible. So you'd want to finish your dinner 2 to 3 hours prior to bedtime. If you're going to bed by 10 p.m., which would be ideal, then you want to complete your dinner by 7 p.m. And again, that should be a light dinner. Not only will you sleep more soundly, but theoretically your body will be able to attend to those critical tasks of detoxification, rejuvenation, rebuilding, rather than having to focus on digesting food. Sipping hot water throughout the day. It's basically, hot water is considered a health elixir in the Vedic tradition. And again, we're trying to dilute this ama, and the ama can build up from external sources and also internal sources. And ama, again, is considered to be sticky, but by nature, hot water dissolves it. So the amount of water that you drink is not as important in the Ayurvedic tradition as the frequency with which you sip. Again, you're not drinking water with meals. You're sipping in between meals, and you're trying to have a few sips of warm water every half hour. And again, consuming enough fluid for your body weight in order to stay hydrated. So you can add fresh ginger or dosha-specific herbs and spices, as we mentioned before, to further enhance the qualities of your hot water. You can see there's some ginger by the little hot water pot there. And the last principle is to practice meditation. So again, we know that hormones associated with high stress can decrease our ability to lose weight, abdominal weight, can increase cortisol. So to see results in both our life and our waistline, we want to devote at least 20 minutes a day, according to Ayurvedic science, again, to meditation. So you're going to sit quietly, relax your body, focus on your breath. The heart math is great. You can use a muse, any kind of a device that just helps you to let those thoughts pass by like floating clouds. And it's just important to remain non-judgmental. Whatever comes up, you just acknowledge and let it go. And eventually the mind will quiet and you'll be able to receive all of the beneficial effects of a regular meditation practice. Again, the mind and the body inseparably connected here. So again, we talked about the use of oils in Ayurveda and cooking. They are used for massage, for bathing, oil pulling, and gargling. We'll touch on that in a minute. Gargling is great because it stimulates that gag reflex and really helps, again, to strengthen the migrating motor complex and to relieve irritable bowel syndrome or constipation. The Basti is colon nourishment, and again, that's done with basically oil implants. And nausea, nasal passage nourishment, that's again, rinsing the nasal passages. And the Shirodhara is the warm oil on the third eye area on the forehead. And they're using whatever oil is compatible with the particular dosha that is needing to be balanced at that time. So again, the sesame, coconut for all of the different doshas. Almond is great. Sunflower for the pitta. And then herbs can be also infused into the oils in Ayurveda, again, appropriately for whichever dosha. So some common Ayurveda practices are the garshana. This is the dry skin brushing. Panchakarma is an actual cleansing protocol that's done in Ayurvedic clinics. And pancha means five, and karma, of course, means action, consequence, fate. I think we're all probably familiar with the word karma, meaning destiny, fate. And part of this protocol, we'll just touch on this so you're familiar with it, is the vamana. And that's actually therapeutic vomiting or emesis, where we're bringing up again this ama. And the virechan or the virechana, this is purgation, the use of laxatives. They also use the Basti. This is the colon cleansing, the herbal enemas and implants in order to nourish, strengthen, and tone the blood through the colon. Nasha is the nasal passage rinsing and nourishment. And then the Raktamoksha, which is detoxification of the blood. Sometimes it has been done by bloodletting, but more commonly the use of blood purifying herbs are used with this final part of the protocol. And the Shiodhara, you can see in the left-hand corner here, this is the warm oil on the third eye area of the forehead. And they have a little band so it doesn't go into your eyes. And this warm oil is just poured on here. And it just, boy, that looks so relaxing to me. I really, after doing this, I'm really excited to try this. Anyway, tongue scraping, oil pulling, and gargling are also some good practices, and we'll look at why. Ama helps, ama needs to be sort of cleared up. The overnight buildup can tend to, again, you know, that's something you really don't want to swallow and put back into the body. So tongue scraping is considered to be a great practice. You have a metal tongue scraper, and this is what it looks like. And you're basically scraping from the back to the front of the tongue. First thing upon arising, before you drink any fluids, is really the best time to do that. So you're going to scrape, and then you rinse your tongue scraper, and then you repeat. And then, you know, you rinse again and sort of spit out. And you can also do this after meals to clean food residue, to support digestion. After, you can do it after brushing your teeth. And you can follow up with oil pulling for 20 minutes. And then after you've done your oil pulling, you can actually scrape again, because the oil pulling is, again, going to bring out many impurities and bacteria, et cetera, in the mouth. Oil pulling is another method of ridding the excess ama, trapping the bacteria and toxins in the mouth. We have some references for you at the end of the slides that you can learn more about any of these practices that you feel might help yourself or your clients. The benefits can help brighten teeth, heal gums, prevent bad breath, curb inflammation, and treat systemic conditions. So any good vegetable oil you can use, obviously you could use the oil for your particular dosha or for whatever dosha is out of balance. Coconut oil is a great oil to use, and as we mentioned, it's great for all three of the doshas. You want to squish approximately a tablespoon. And again, if it's coconut oil and it's winter, it's probably going to be solid, but that's okay. You just let that melt in your mouth. This is something I do every morning, and I have loved it. My husband is a dentist, and we've found that this just actually is one of the best practices people can do. So you have a tablespoon for 20 minutes, and you're just swishing this around. You want to be sure when you expel the oil that you do it into the trash so that it doesn't clog up your sink. You can rinse the mouth afterwards, and a saline rinse is always good. I have some liquid electrolytes that have, they're the liquid salt, and so I rinse with that. Then you can follow with another tongue scraping. And really, it just feels so nice and clean in the morning. The Garshana, the dry skin brushing, can help not only to remove the dead skin layers, but it's going to stimulate the lymph as well. You can use silk gloves, an organic sea sponge, a dry natural bristle brush. You want to massage the entire body. Obviously, you want to exclude the face, chest, heart, or any sensitive or inflamed areas. But circular strokes on the stomach, on the joint, and then on the arms and legs. Lighter pressure where the skin is thin, like the underarms, harder pressure where the skin is thicker, such as the soles of the feet. And you always want to be stroking towards the heart and towards the lymph nodes to drain the lymph and to help to drain that lymph. You're going to massage from the feet upward and continuing up to the torso and the neck. It just feels great. And you can massage from the hands up to the shoulders and then again up to that lymph there in the armpit. And about 5 minutes, and then you can complete with a shower. And to enhance the release of toxins, you can do a few cycles of hot, then cold water. So you do hot maybe for, you know, 60 seconds, cold water 30 seconds, hot 60, cold water 30. This hot-cold hydrotherapy is great to stimulate blood circulation and further invigorate the skin. And then also nasha is helpful for sinus infections. This is the irrigation of the sinus cavities. And we can do. You can also do kind of a small at-home version with the neti pot for stiffness of the shoulder and the neck as well, not only headaches, migraines, oral cavity issues, gingivitis, loose teeth. It's interesting how much of that is tied into the sinus area. Even facial paralysis, motor neuron disorders, convulsions have been helped with this. And again, you can use the oils, the decoctions, juice extracts, powders, herbals can be administered through the nasal cavity for this cleansing. So a couple, just to wrap up, a couple pros and cons that we've sort of encountered with Ayurveda that you might want to keep in mind as you're looking at different protocols for different clients. The pros are it has a digestion and detox focus that are great. The mind-body approach we definitely feel is super. The protocols are semi-customized for your clients, you know, by dosha. and to understand what will balance each dosha, and lifestyle recommendations and some of these protocols, the oil pulling, the dry skin brushing, nasal passage cleansing, colon cleansing, etc. It uses herbs, whole foods, and oils. It incorporates energy principles. And it's a good protocol for basic wellness if you have someone that doesn't have, you know, some chronic conditions. Some cons is that it does allow acidic and some allergenic foods that your client may not be able to tolerate or may not do well with, such as the meat, the dairy, the grains and the gluten, the sweet fruits and the sweeteners. It can also be high glycemic, so you may want to tailor this to their particular needs and their particular blood sugar stability or instability. There really are only the three basic doshas. A client can be a combination of doshas, so it can get somewhat complex, but it's good for general wellness. Complicated cases might need some more digging, more study, and lab values, again, they're not generally considered in creating these protocols. They're pretty much, you know, just going by symptoms and symptomatic values here. So, but there are some takeaways that I think are great. And we do have some reference slides for you. So with that in mind, Dr. Rita Marie, do you have anything more to add?
Yeah, so the things I wanted to point out were that I love a lot of the principles in here, the same way I love a lot of the principles in macrobiotics and a lot of other food religions, so to speak. But we get into danger when we use them as religions. And that's the thing that, you know, you did point out right there at the end, that there's some of the things in there that make so total sense and can be easily incorporated into, say, a blood sugar balancing or a digestive balancing program that you're putting together based on the things you've been learning here and based on the things you've learned before. But it's always good to take into account this other stuff. One of our clients was saying that she had seen an Ayurvedic doctor for about a year, a practitioner, and it really messed her up because the person put her on dairy products, which she had been off of, and a lot of khichdi, a lot of rice and beans. And she had a blood sugar problem, and her blood sugars, as we started testing her, were going up into the 150s from her khichdi. And her fructosamine was high, and her hemoglobin A1C was high, even though she never ate refined sugar or starch, you know, flour kind of products, but she started to incorporate these things and it threw her out of balance. And so once we did some labs on her, the whole thing about labs, we did the labs on her and figured out where the imbalances lie. She could take a lot of the principles, the oil pulling and the skin brushing and the tongue scraping and really eating according to the dosha or combination doshas, but she could temper it. And the other thing to consider is that a lot of times they talk about raw, don't eat raw foods. And there's a lot of stuff with that where people who are even a Vata can eat raw foods, depends on how it's prepared. They're not going to probably do well by just eating salads and celery sticks all day. But when you incorporate the spices in there and you gently heat them or you dehydrate or things like that, you can do really well. So that's all I wanted to add to it, is that this is awesome stuff. There's so many great things. And I'm thinking in terms of how, you know, we can incorporate some of these principles in as we're creating our plans for people. So thank you so much for presenting that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yes, and I totally agree. Many of these principles we can use. A lot of them are already really what we teach, what you teach, and have always taught us. Again, the meditation, the proper digestion. So some great principles, and as you mentioned, it can really help us to relate to certain clients depending on where they're coming from. I had people in my yoga class that were very interested in Ayurvedic principles, and so to be able to, as you mentioned, take them but tweak them so that they can really achieve the optimal wellness, you know, with what we know as far as blood sugar, as far as adrenal support, thyroid support, et cetera.
Right.
I was excited to learn about some of these other herbs that I think are great to try too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Jan.